When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard. And I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Go ahead, break it down, really. Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
Check this out. What am I, a monkey? You can zoom in, zoom out, change angles. Go anywhere you want to go, do anything you want to do.
Here we go!
This place is really sweet. Whoa, I'm out of here.
Change the system.
My gosh.
That was awesome.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Play Retro. I'm Scott Johnson, your host. And these polygons sure have a lot of jaggies.
And I am your other host, Brian Dunaway, and I'm having trouble navigating the Z-axis with these quirky controls of life. How do you even hold this thing?
Yeah, we got to have a talk about that little Z-axis bullcrap. That thing's a problem, you know? Like, we're gonna talk about stuff today where we're gonna talk about some successful things, but most of our focus is on why was the transition from 2D to 3D so freaking hard in the mid to late 90s? And some games, you know, did okay, some games did terribly, but then there's a couple that did okay, but also didn't really have an idea of how they wanted to work that control yet, you know?
Yeah, how did our rock stars do it? How did the console mascots do it, right? That's the ones we want to see fall flat on their 3D faces.
Or that's right.
Maybe not.
Or their 2.5D faces, if you count that Sonic, what's it called? Sonic Spin.
The isometric 3D Blast?
3D Blast, yeah. Which I thought was rad back in the day. Does it hold up?
It's got 3D in the name.
Yeah, the little intro movie is really bad.
Well,
really, we should talk about
that when we get to that point, because I would like to talk about that intro.
We'll get to it. We talk about retro stuff here on the show. We're going to do all of that coming right up. But before we do, I have been giving a lot of thought this week and last week, really. Or since we last talked, I guess, about the Steam Deck. Because more of my friends are getting their Steam Decks, and they're stoked about it, you know, getting all stoked.
You have other friends?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a whole bunch of them. They're not as cool as you, though. They're not as cool as you.
Okay, good. All right, yeah, continue. Yeah. Steam Deck.
I'm good now? Okay.
Sure.
They're all getting their Steam Decks because they're in like the second phase of shipping or whatever. I still haven't got a notification, so I assume I'm in the third or fourth. And that isn't even guarantee I'm getting it. And here's the thinking. So they made a bunch of advancements with it since it released, like fixed a bunch of problems it was having, mostly UI issues and some performance stuff and a few other things. However, the big question for me is, will this be the end-all, be-all, ultimate retro machine, handheld retro machine? And I think it might be.
Yeah, I think it is. I think you're absolutely correct. I think that is the main thing pushing this device. I think more people are interested in making this thing into a retro machine than just about anything else. I can't say that for sure. And maybe I have a very narrow field of view, but it feels like whenever anybody talks about it, they're always like, oh, I want to do some retro gaming on this thing.
Yeah, I think maybe some of that is early adopters are going to be the types that also want to tweak it and hack it and goof around with it. Whereas right. everybody else in the mainstream sort of like, yeah, let me know when that's cheaper or let me know when that's popular yeah. or whatever.
I mean, we kind of already, they've kind of already had a couple of things like this, but not to this degree of quality where you could have an actual PC in your hand, like close to something like a Switch. But I mean, is it really that compelling to have your PC games on a handheld? I mean, it's kind of there. I mean, we had the NVIDIA Shield and I don't know, but doing the retro thing.
I mean, for me, I'm not so interested in like 3D games, but I do want, well, when I say 3D games, I mean like big AAA games. I don't really care if that's on a handheld, but I am interested right. in just like the throng of amazing indie content that you could play there. So
yeah,
I don't know. I feel like
all my platforming games, I'm stoked about.
Oh yeah, platformers and freaking every Castlevania like you own, you'll want to play on there. You're gonna want to play your what's that one, Death's Door, which is a game I keep meaning to get back to and beat. Like, there's a lot of games I want to play on there, but I have to admit, my chief interest here is how will this be as a device that is a good, you know, retro machine. And it sounds like somebody in the chat says emulation stations running on it just fine. So that's cool.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see a lot of things. Now, once again, I'm subscribed to a lot of retro stuff and maybe it just feels like all the news I'm seeing on the Steam Deck seems to be like, it's like, oh, it seems like be retro stuff. But you know, I will say even on Polygon and the mainstream stuff, I still see more news about the retro and possibility of retro more than I see, you know, people being excited about, you know, AAA titles or something.
Well, the nice thing is you should be able to, in theory, the retro, the potential retro gets bigger because you're not just talking some Game Boy shit. You're talking about everything in the 2D era, everything up till, I don't know, maybe even past Dreamcast. We might even be talking like some of the 360 and PS3 emulation that's going on. I don't know, but you know, this is it's a really compelling and interesting device. And
I'm not even in line, Scott. I'm not even in line on the Steam Deck.
Yeah.
Why should I get
I know
in
why
line?
You're not. I know why you're not in what? Line because you don't like hype. You're never a tip of the spear hype guy. No, you're not into it. You like when there's something sneakily hypey, like somebody on a Reddit page went, do y'all hear about the thing and you plug it into the deal and do the stuff? And then Brian goes, ooh, because you like that kind of thing.
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
I think it's been pretty typical. I think maybe as a defense mechanism from all those years of launch things, it's like, oh, it's a launch thing. Everybody's going to be in line for it. I don't want to fight anybody. As a matter of fact, I had an opportunity to, like, you know, get a PS5. I had an opportunity to wait in line to get a PS5. Yes. And I said, no, I'm not waiting in line for any of this stuff. Neither now, if you say, Brian, do you want, there's a new device and you want to put your name on a list to be notified when it's available? Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So in that way, the Steam Deck is kind of more like my usual thing. But I think you're right. I think the hype kind of turns me off a little bit.
Yeah, I do that too. I have to admit. That's sexy. And it didn't used to be that way. I used to be first in line kind of guy. I just don't care anymore. Right. I don't have enough shits to give anymore about stuff like that. But I know that eventually I'll get my hands on one, whether it's now or later, or maybe by then it won't matter because it failed, or maybe it did real well. And I'm like, all right, it looks like it's time to bite the bullet. Problem is, speaking of biting things, I have to get a new crown in 2 weeks, which means there goes $1,000. So
yeah,
F the Steam Deck, I guess. And then
remember when you used to have a tooth there?
Yeah.
That was real retro.
Yeah, that was retro as hell. Actually, it's funny you say that. I have a silver tooth a silver filling that's failing. And it's the last tooth I have from high school that has something done to it from high school. So that filling happened when I was like a sophomore. And it's finally coming out all these years later. And I'm pretty stoked about it.
I'm pretty stoked. This old, ancient, who knows what was in that stuff. It's finally coming out. The dentist probably knows, but I don't know what it is. But why silver? Make it flesh colored. Why can't you make it tooth colored?
Well, don't make it flesh colored. That's weird. But you could do it.
It's actually, you're right. That is a little bit weird. I think I meant to say tooth color, and you're right. But, you know, I'm so excited about the Steam Deck, but I'm also just kind of waiting to when it's just like being sold like normal so that I can go, I'm ready to buy.
Yeah.
Here it comes.
I like to be
here
free.
In X number of days.
I like to be free of that demand sequence of
Yeah. Ooh. I don't like thinking about something every day.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm with you, dude. I feel like as the older I get, the less that appeals to me. And
right. Except for the thing that, except for the rumors that Nintendo is spreading around about that Game Boy support on the Switch.
Oh, GBA. Yeah. They better not. Okay. If they add that support.
Yeah.
And they don't raise the price on the monthly thing past where it is with the N64 add-on, you might have me.
Problem with the N64 thing, the last time I looked, you have to, it's you know, they say, oh, here's the monthly cost, but they say, but you got to sign up for a year. And I'm like,
what?
What if I'm not interested now that maybe has changed? But at the point that I was looking to do it, it's the way it read to me was I had to do it for a whole year. And I'm like, I don't know if I'll be interested in N64 every month for a year.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe occasionally.
Yeah. This year business, F that. Not doing that.
Yeah.
What are you? A satellite contract from 8 years ago? What are you doing?
Get out of here.
What are you doing? Anyway.
So, but yes, I'm excited about that because I've this show and you, Scott Johnson, has given me the appreciation for the Game Boy Advance games that I never had back in the day. I always considered them to be inferior games, and I really missed out.
You are wrong.
I was wrong. I'm right now.
Yeah, you're right now. You are right now.
Right.
I would actually say they are superior games in many ways.
They are, really.
Of the 2D generation, I think that stuff is amazing. Some of the best stuff ever happened on the Game Boy. So
Yeah.
Take that.
Agreed.
Take that. All right. Well, that's what's been going on with me. I understand you've been dinking around with your StarTech capture device crap. Brian's whole life is all about bypassing HDMI and making better graphics out of old shit. That's your deal.
It really is. And lately has been more about getting a better and less and less latency wherever that bottleneck is. And so, you know, we talked last week about a capture device that was sent to me, and I played with it, and it was just like it was a little cable with a composite input. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I wonder if something is any better out there. So I looked at StarTech. You may not be familiar with StarTech. They make a lot of cable stuff. But they have this capture card for about $150 on Amazon. And it allows me to input in composite S-video component. I got a DVI in there and an HDMI cable. So there's all these different interfaces. And the reason why that's exciting is because right now on most of my equipment, I am upscaling using an HDMI cable, right? And so that introduces lag.
Oh, and I see. Okay.
Yeah. So some of these games that I'm wanting to play, like fighting games, this hopefully will eliminate this. It's USB 3. And like I said, it's got composite, it's video, it's got these different cables that I can input into, and it is, I did a little test, it is slightly faster than the cable that was sent to me, which is not a surprise. This is a much beefier piece of equipment. The other one just has like an inline cable components built into it.
Sure.
But I tested a Genesis, what was it, an X-Men game, I think, and there's like all kinds of snow going on, and there's all kind of stuff going on the screen. And this was just a little bit faster, enough faster that I would go, oh, yeah, I might be able to jump or make a move a little bit quicker with this thing. So I'm pretty excited about that.
That's pretty awesome. I like it.
Yeah. Like I said, about $150. It's a StarTech video capture device, 1080p, which is, you know, I'm mostly doing this stuff for streaming purposes. So, you know, 1080p is plenty enough for what I'm doing.
Oh, I just realized how I know these guys. I have one of their USB-C hubs.
Yeah.
Works great. They don't have enough that are USB-C only. They have a lot that it's like, hey, plug in a couple of USB-Cs, but then here's 500 freaking USB-3s. And that's fine.
They always seem...
Come on, man. Give me the
They're always making adapters that I end up needing because I'm like, oh, I need I need to go from DVI to HDMI, or you know, I need to do something like that. And they make good quality products that aren't too expensive.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I'll give them that.
They seem to be good.
I'll give them that. So go check it out. If that sounds like something you're trying to do at home with your conversion, like Brian's doing, StarTech might have the answer.
But don't forget to ask me about my coasters.
Your coasters are stupid. I mean, what's going on with your coasters? Just kidding. They're cool. What are they?
Coasters?
What is this?
I was getting that StarTech
thing. Dude, where'd you get those? Those are awesome.
aren't these sweet? These are NES coasters. So imagine, if you will, the original NES and their, you know, their carts that you would see.
I thought they were cartridges when you held it up. That's so cool.
Aren't they like cartridges? When you look at them from the front, this is what 3D does for you, people. Okay, if you look at it front like this, you're like, oh, look at that. Brian's holding a cartridge because it's got the original artwork and label and everything. Mm. And then you turn to the side and you're like, oh, that's like a coaster. And it's got all these great ones. It's got all the classics. It's got the Mario. It's got the Zelda in there. It's got the Super Mario 3, 2. I mean, this is
only
so much
nine.
Fun.
It's only $9.
$9, man.
I'm doing
$9.
I'm doing this. I'm doing this. They got a whole bunch of these. They got PS1 stuff. They have old floppy disk ones. They got
I've been kind of adding them in when I order stuff. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna throw that in my cart while I'm getting this.
These are great, dude. So wait, is this the Paladone or whatever? Paladone?
Paladone, is that what it's called? Yes, Paladone is the name brand, and these are the NES coasters. I can't imagine they would be really good coasters because they're just barely above paper quality. But the novelty of it is really cool.
I love it. All right, chat, if you're curious, I will put a link in the chat and you can go get it yourself with a gigantic link. Look at that thing. Oh my gosh. All right, well, you've done it. Well done. Let's dive into today's discussion now.
Shall we play a game?
Hey, Brian, there are a lot of games that were great 2D games, and then the 3D world came along and said, hey, look at this, PS1, N64 time. Everything's going 3D. What are you going to do, Mario, Sonic, Rayman, Bubsy, a million others? And they all said, varying degrees of okay to shitty is what their answer was. It was a hard transition. It was actually really, really tricky time for those franchises to try to figure out their place in a 3D world and how those games would translate really well. I think everybody always thinks of this game here.
Okie dokie.
And listen to this.
Dear Mario, please come to the castle. I have baked a cake for you. Yours truly, Princess Toadstool.
Okay.
Peach.
That peach. Bullcrap. Is the worst. First of all, it's not. Peach. They don't have their volume is effed up because their music's too loud. And Peach, you can barely hear her. But then again, VO back then, nobody knew what they were doing yet. Mario sounded fine. Peach was horrendous. But then, you know, you got this. Gameplay. Hey, look at Mario running around in 3D, full three dimensions. It worked. They somehow pulled it off. We'll get to the Z-axis in a minute. But the game, somehow, 3D platformers were born, I think, on the back of the success of Mario 64. Everything else that came after kind of stole from it, lifted from it, including their own games. And I don't think there's any getting around the impact and how powerful Mario 64 was in the day.
Super Mario 64 was absolutely, literally a game changer. And it came in and it was just... It blew our minds. It was well reviewed at the time, and it's still well reviewed.
It's still one of the greatest games ever made. Period. Just one of the greatest.
Right. Yeah. It's one of the greatest games, but don't get me wrong, because we're going to talk about what they got wrong, because there's still plenty to be disappointed. Maybe no, we wouldn't even say disappointed. To be there's plenty of disappointing things to experience. How about that?
There is, in a retro way, because in the at the time of it, it blew our minds and it was like nothing else, and we were happy to take it. Right?
I'm going to disagree with you there because
this
had some game breaking to it for me. There was literally, I played this back in the day. And I rage quit like after level two, and I kept coming back to it and going, I can't stand the way this controls.
What'd you hate about it?
I didn't understand what I hated about it at the time. Yeah. I was just like, I don't like it. Now you also got to remember this is 1996.
Yeah.
96. And so we're also, in addition to consoles going 3D, we're also seeing Quake. We're seeing Tomb Raider on the PC.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are also some very compelling early 3D things and competing. So if you were just on, if you invested into the 64 system, this would be absolutely the showstopper. It would be no comparison.
But I don't. Okay, forget about controls for a second. I don't. I'm not saying they're not important. But let's discuss this game. And by the way, this is not our episode on the Mario series. That's coming at a different time.
Oh God, yes.
We're going to talk about this in the context of, you know, some of these other failures. But this game, its structure, what you did, how you did it, how you cleared a level, the inventive design of, you know, how this game works and how it didn't, how nobody else seemed to know what they were doing. I mean, they were way ahead of their effing time, this game.
Oh, they were so far ahead. And I think that actually may have hurt them just a little bit.
Mm.
And I've been trying to think all week what I think created the failure for me. Obviously not a failure for everybody. Obviously plenty of people like it. But I also know that some of the complaints I have are some of the same complaints that I've heard other people say as well. So they were inventing this, man. This was a 3D action platformer. That was open world. It wasn't just an action platform. It was open world too, right? Mm-hmm. So I mean we're running around with Mario in a whole new way.
Yeah.
He's able to go just about anywhere. And you could make decisions based on any of that stuff.
Yeah, you could go where you wanted to. The idea of open world games didn't even exist. And this was a game. Well, I mean, there were some concepts that were sort of open world-y, this is truly one of those.
Not in the platforming arena.
Yeah, and this had kind of a combination of you need to do this before you can progress, but also you can do a lot of stuff before you have to go to that place. Like there's plenty to do and try and fail at and go try another one while you're recuperating from your horrible failure. I think that in retrospect, the camera controls are bad, but we didn't know what we were doing yet. Like it was too early. This is like the first of its kind. So when you see this show up on people's best video games of all time in the top two or three, it deserves it.
It is absolutely one of the best games. Now, if you go, what's one of the most enjoyable games to play? It's not going to be in the top 100.
I would put... still don't know, dude. I found it to be magical when I played it. Like,
I think, like I said, if you enjoyed it back in the day. Okay, so here's probably the thing that I realized. I started going back and I shared some of the YouTube links I had for what I did for research for Super Mario 64 while I was trying to figure out what exactly it was that really irritated me, because back in the day it was just, I didn't like it. I just didn't play it. I'm out. I've had a lot of game experience since then, and I'm like, oh, let's try to figure this out. What was really bothering me? Well, part of it was the jumping was not always 100% consistent with my expectations. So some of the things I found out about the programming is in the platforming, 2D platforming, everything was calculated exactly. When you jumped, it was all timed to a – you knew – the character in the program knew – where you were going to land based on your interaction. Here in a 3D world, it's a lot more complicated. So there's, when you jump, it kind of can cheat a little bit to kind of let you land in certain places. So it's kind of got this close enough mentality. Only problem with that is it also can screw you. So in sometimes it saves you, but then in other times it screws you. Mm-hmm. And I've never liked that in any games because I really need my character precision and physics to be consistent.
I get you. Now, here's the thing, though. This is what we're talking about today. So I think it speaks to that. So I don't disagree with what you're saying. But I would argue that its classic status holds up. But it holds up with the caveat of we were going through a growing pain here. And that growing pain was evident here. It was evident on almost everything the PlayStation put out.
Right.
I mean, there was just no getting around that. It just everything looked like shit on there. And control was an issue. And I just don't think we had it figured out. There was a whole new way of thinking, a new language of game development and play that we were just now starting to poke our head into. Yeah. And this was an example of that being done as well as you could do it at the time.
Absolutely.
But in retrospect, maybe not so great. Whereas those 2D games hold up, you know, all the time. They're always good.
Yeah, I don't blame them one bit. For the shortcomings, I don't blame them one bit because you don't know. This is a lot of complex ideas all thrown into this pot of will it be good? Does it fit? Not will it be good. I'm sorry. Does it fit in Nintendo's usual philosophy? Mm-hmm. Fun first. Mm-hmm. Is it fun? It's got to be fun. Nothing else matters. I didn't have fun.
Oh, see, I think you're, so I'm like, I think you're weird, like, but that's okay. There's nothing wrong with you being weird, because there's exactly. no way that this felt good to everybody. There's no way. But I played this game to completion twice, I think.
Oh my God. How did you do it?
Oh, because I loved it. It was so good. And yes, it was a new way of doing things. But once you get those quirks, you figure it out.
Right.
It's not, you know, the hardest thing.
Well, let's put it this way. On the other, so let's give you an idea of what I'm experiencing at the time. Mm. I'm hopping back and forth between this and playing Quake. Quake is the fastest freaking game you'll ever play in your life.
Yeah, Quake,
that
great.
Game is like super speed, and everything is pinpoint accurate. Once you learn how to do something in Quake, you just had it every time consistently. You could do a rocket launch, you could do all kinds of stuff, and it was always 100% landed where you thought it was going to land. Here, like I said, I would get into places where I'm like, oh, I can't see. I can't see. The camera's kind of stuck. I'm like, oh, I can't get around. And it's like, and then when I'm jumping, like if you, what is it like, if you jump three times in a row, then you launch yourself or something. Mm-hmm. So many times I'd be fighting against something like a boss or something. And I'm like, and you expect those spaces to be even, right? You're like, okay, it's, you know, you don't just press a button three times within 10 minutes and it does something. It's like 10, you know, it's three times within so many seconds.
Right.
That never seemed to be consistent. So I would like, I would hit it and then I wouldn't jump. And then I would hit it two more times and suddenly in a third jump. And suddenly I'm flying off the edge of something. And I'm like, what is going on? Why am I dying?
No, I get you. Look, those are valid. I think those are valid complaints.
Right.
I just think, again, it was an awkward time. So I think we can also agree that if anyone got it right, it was this.
Most of these
got it wrong. A lot of them.
This is by far the most it's the biggest attempt at doing the biggest thing, and they nailed it. They nailed it.
Yes. Let me give you a game that did a terrible job. I'm gonna play just a little sound from it. See if you can guess what this game is. Okay. I hated this game, even though it had some inventive stuff to do. I hated it. Here it is. Any ideas? Does that sound familiar to you at all? All right. The game is Rayman 2.
Oh, is that Rayman? Oh, yeah. God.
Now, Rayman 2 is on, I want to say...
You're baiting me because you know my hate for Rayman.
Yeah, you don't like Rayman. Brian doesn't like Rayman because he doesn't have any joints. He's missing a neck.
He doesn't have any appendages. He's got hands and feet. Is that well? He doesn't have the connective tissue between the hands and the body.
Yeah, and he's got no neck. It's just his doofy head on top of the thing.
Stop cheating me.
Yeah. Now the later 2D-ish stuff that came out like 10 years ago or less. Those are cool. I like those games a lot. They're really fun. They remind me of like...
Rayman gets really good. He has a couple of really excellent titles that are just freaking phenomenal.
Yeah. And this game...
Rayman.
There's some stuff here. It's okay. I just don't think these early attempts at 3D games worked all that well. That's all.
It reminded me somewhat of... I don't know if you remember this title, Croc.
I do remember Croc. Yeah.
From PlayStation. Yeah. Now, I liked Croc from PlayStation, a.k.a. the failed Yoshi game, the Yoshi game that Nintendo decided they didn't want, and so they went off and made Croc.
Yeah, is that what happened? This isn't really it's not a Nintendo.
That's what really happened. I didn't learn this until this past week, but yes, it's Traveler's Tales, right? They were working with
Traveler's Tales did the Sonic 3D Blast thing you were talking about.
That's right. Well. They were working with Nintendo on bringing a Yoshi game, and they gave Nintendo and said, "Look what we got here. It's really cool, right?" And Nintendo was like, "Yeah, but no." And so they went off and they reskinned it a little bit, and they called it Croc and sold it to the Sony PlayStation. And there you go.
Yeah.
This could have been the first 3D game. Potentially, from when it was first being developed.
Yeah, they could have been before everybody else. I remember kind of liking Croc. I played it. It was all right.
Yeah, I liked it pretty good. It was all right. I'm glad it wasn't a Yoshi game. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe Nintendo would have forced them to have a little better, more little quality control. I mean, Clock 2 was a little bit better. I liked it. It was fun.
Because if it wasn't as good, as good enough for Nintendo standards or whatever, then you know, I have no reason to think that that's not true. But I actually enjoyed the time I spent it. I totally forgot about Croc. Holy crap!
Yeah,
look at that thing. But maybe that's the problem. Is it's pretty forgettable. If it was Yoshi,
it's okay. It's not bad.
Yeah, it's okay. Now, I would recommend, by the way, your whole control thing with Mario 64. When's the last time you watched somebody speed run that business? Because man,
oh god,
you want accuracy? Those people seem to have it. They know what they're doing.
If you were just speed running, probably. If you were just speed running.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's an open world, so there's plenty of potential impossibilities of, you know, trying different areas that, you know, a speed runner would probably never even hit. So, I mean, like Quake. Once again, I'll go back to Quake. I could be anywhere in Quake, and I could do the things I wanted to do.
That's true. But they're not, you know, I mean, obviously they're not platformers, but I played Quake the other day. Quake is hard to play now, I think. To me, it's a similar thing. It's like first attempt, amazing. We all loved it. We didn't care. But we've refined how those games feel. And now they feel better. And so when you go back and play Quake, you're like, oh, this is weird, twitchy, and way too slippery. And like it's all over the place.
And it's hard to say because, okay, so let's talk about how I played Super Mario 64 this past week. I played it. I kind of searched my soul and said, okay, how did I feel about the N64 at the time? How did the game feel to me? Mm-hmm. And then I also played this N64 game on my PC using RetroArch and iMuppin, maybe. I can't remember what the core was, the emulator that I used for the 64. And I was like, is this how it really felt? Because I don't know, because I had an Xbox Series controller because I did not have a N64 controller. And I was like, I really feel like I need to do that because I had completely kind of forgotten that those four yellow buttons on the upper right hand side of the controller was what, you know, managed the camera. And on my Series controller, it was done with my analog stick. And I'm like, well, this isn't a real experience. I'm like, do I really know what I'm doing here? So I ordered an N64 controller, by the way, which I was hoping would be here by now. It's not. And I also ordered an adapter that allows me to plug in two
N64
controllers into my PC. So I'm going to
You're like a multi-tap junior there, dude. That's what that is.
It really is. And so I'm going to come back to it later and talk about how I think the controls hold up at greater length. That's the reason why I don't want to tackle the control part as much as what I felt like was going on.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why I kind of watched some of those, how things were programmed and how it was, you know, how everything was set up on the back end. I don't want people to think that I can't believe Brian hated Super Mario 64. I didn't hate it.
No. You don't hate it.
I didn't hate it. I just didn't find joy in playing it like I did other 3D games.
Well, see, that's the place where you and I will diverge because to me it was pure video game joy when I got that game. I was so enamored. I wanted to do. I loved it
much. How were you holding the controller, Scott?
That controller, I mean, I'm going to go ahead and say it out loud. That controller sucks. It's bad. It's a bad controller.
It is a tool that is trying to perform too many functions, in my opinion. But I've always felt like I've never been a big fan of any of the Nintendo controllers, except for the N64's not too far off brother, the GameCube controller. Which I kind of love.
I love the GameCube controller. Comfortable as hell, that thing. I've liked every controller Nintendo's ever made with two exceptions. The N64 and the Wiimotes. Don't like them.
The Wiimote. Oh, my God. Kiss my Wiimote butt.
Not a fan. But I really like how the Switch feels. I like Switch Pro controllers. I like an NES, SNES controller still feels great in one's hand.
Right.
They did a great job, but I don't
feel like the Pro controller. I don't lump it in because you didn't typically get that with the system. I'm thinking about controllers that came with the system I could go like, oh, but look at that Xbox Elite controller. Nah, it didn't really come with the system.
Yeah. You got to do the stock one. You have to do the stock one.
Yeah.
Whatever the stock one is. I like everyone wants to talk about the Wavebird on the GameCube. Very cool controller. Yeah. It didn't come with it. So you can't.
It did not. It was a very cool controller. You know, it was wireless. It's still fairly expensive. People, I love the fact certain things that I've been learning as I've been trying to not really collect, but make a full entertainment experience with my GameCube. And I found two things that are very difficult to find because they didn't come, they weren't attached to anything. So like the WaveBird controller, the dongle that plugs into the system,
yep.
Everybody loses that apparently.
Yeah,
everybody loses it. So they're freaking expensive. You can find WaveBirds anywhere, but the little receiver, you can't find anywhere. It's expensive. And then the stupid Game Boy player disc you got to have. You can get a Game Boy player for your GameCube for like $50. It's like $200 for a disc.
Yeah.
it's ridiculous because it is no one can keep up with it apparently.
Yeah. No, I agree.
This is not a game.
But yeah, all that aside, you know, again, it's an awkward period and I feel like they struggled. The people that didn't struggle were the ones that were paying attention and then coming out later with things like Sony's second controller, the DualShock 1, which was basically just the Sony controller with the two sticks, was great. Hardly any game supported it, unfortunately, but it was still great. And that became the design to this day. Like they all look like that. You know, I'm holding, I have third party controllers here that all sort of still use the same design. It was a really ingenious design. It didn't need a Z key. It didn't need a little yellow thing for moving camera shit around. Like, what were they thinking? Nintendo, it's a weird Nintendo time for me. I just don't know what they're thinking.
I think Miyamoto was pushing that because he realized very early on because they loved what Star Fox was. That was kind of how we got to Super Mario 64 was what Star Fox was doing. And by the way, I didn't know this either. I learned all kinds of stuff this past week about what was going on with that. Star Fox, originally, the developers wanted to make it kind of more open world where you could fly around anywhere. But Miyamoto was like, no, it needs to be like on rails. Mm-hmm. And then he comes back and goes on Super Mario 64. No, he's like, no, it needs to be wide open.
Yeah.
But he didn't feel comfortable until he had a controller that could do it. That's the reason why even though Super Mario 64 was ready as early as the SNES, the way they could do some things, they could actually fake some of it and make it work out. And the processing capabilities was kind of close enough that they could do something, but the controls, he didn't feel like the controls were there. So they designed this controller, which you see right now, somebody is doing the thing that
they're doing a teardown
on the video, by the way.
If you've never seen a restoration on this video, they're going to take it and clean it and then put it back together and make sure it's all.
If you've never seen it, N64 controller, it is kind of like you would expect from a normal controller where it's got two grippers on the edges, but then in the center, there's like this center holding spot for a thumbstick. So you could hold the controller either this, like at a 45 degree angle this way where your thumb is on the thumbstick, or you could hold it on each end and reach your thumb over if you needed to. So it was just, it was trying to solve a very complex problem.
Those were dumb, those controllers, go buy a third party one in that era. The third party N64 controllers, those were the epitome of stupid. They were so big and dumb and clunky. Oh my gosh, they're so bad.
And not well built. And the one thing about the N64 too, man, we need to have a whole episode on controllers. I love me some controllers.
Yeah.
But one of the things that the N64 controller had, a couple of things. First, it had a rumble pack you could plug in. That was all new idea, right? And then wasn't a memory, but what was it? There was a couple of different packs.
It was a memory expansion pack, but all those went into the machine itself. They were into the base unit, not the controller.
There was two different things you could plug into the controller. One of them, I think, was a rumble pack, and one was, what was it? Was it set memory save? No, that doesn't make sense. I don't know.
I
can't remember what it was.
I don't know. I thought it was only a rumble pack, but maybe there was something else.
There was something else you could plug into it, because I always had to swap it out, because I was like, burger.
Look at this guy brushing his chips. This is nice.
Yeah. By the way, if you do decide to get an N64 controller on eBay, which I went with the OEM, the one I purchased, and you've got to make sure that you buy one that still has a stiff stick. That's something you need to look at, because those thumbsticks really, they didn't know how the usage was going to be on those things. They didn't know how.
Yeah, they thought a lot of games are still going to be these 2D games, and some were, but for the most part, that stick became the standard. And now every game's like that. It's all analog
and
sticks.
And these sticks are, it's freaking amazing that the sticks hold up as well as they do. We complain about controller drift, but it's amazing that they hold up as well as they do, as much as we, well, you know, we foodle around with them. Scott.
All my Xbox branded controllers, I've never had controller drift on any of them. But my Sony ones, the Sony ones, rubber comes off real easy.
Yeah.
After a lot of use, I have some drift on those. The Nintendo ones have been a little drifty. For whatever reason, right. The Xbox ones are just like solid as a rock when it comes to those sticks. They're not the best D-pads, so the sticks are good.
I agree. They've addressed that in a couple of, you know, like the Elite for the D-pad. You know, I've got large hands, and the Xbox controller is perfect for me. Mm. I won't say that it's a superior controller over any other controller, other than to say that the Xbox is perfect.
It became the standard for PC connectivity for controllers, and
right,
kind of hard to deny all that. But
yeah, Microsoft is like support for everywhere.
Yeah,
let everybody have support for these controllers.
Exactly. I like the PS5 controller fine, but I find it flimsy and weird feeling compared to my those series controllers. Just feel like trucks. It's like, give me that. I'm a play video game. Like, there's just something about them. Can't explain it. All right, let's talk about Sonic 3D Blast. Can't say English. Sonic 3D Blast. I'll play a little bit of this, so anyone who remembers this, good on you, okay? So this was Sonic 3D Blast. Little intro. Oh, that sound. Yeah, do a little character selection here. This is where you decide what you're going to do. Okay. Pick your level. Okay. And then go. Almost. Skip ahead. Oh, here we go. So this is a late-ass Genesis game, right?
This is the last Sonic game on the Genesis. This was 2 years, or maybe at least a year after they had discontinued support for the Genesis system, but they were still developing a few games. And Sonic 3D Blast was blasted onto the blast processing of the Sega Genesis in 1996. And you may go, Brian, Scott, this is not a 3D game. It's 3D rendered sprites.
Pseudo 3D game.
On an isometric board. Yeah. And I'll go, wait a minute, we have a point. The games that we're reviewing today were all a race to make it to console 3D platforming. And the year was 1996, where three of these systems brought something to the table and either succeeded or failed. And we're going to talk about that
Sales-wise, this game did not sell well, but I think that Sonic 3D Blast is a rad game. And
I think it's
not enough love, I don't think.
I love this game, even though it's not true 3D yet on the Sega Genesis, but I will give them credit, because when this was ported over to the Sega Saturn a year later, it's like everybody turned in their 3D homework. Mm-hmm. And Nintendo had their stuff. They got A's.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, it was Sony turned in their Crash Bandicoot. They got an A.
They got a B.
Well, anyway, they scored. They turned in their work. Yeah. Sega said, here's a kind of 3D game. Can we have more time? And so...
yeah, like a whole generation of consoles worth of time is what they
wanted. Right. So we said, we'll see.
Yeah.
And so Saturn, the very following year, they released Sonic 3D Blast, a port over to that. And it, and the bonus stages, was true 3D rendering. Mm-hmm. It was going to be something that we were going to see going forward.
Sort of.
So they kind of get some credit, but Sonic 3D Blast was essentially the 3D homework they turned in.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. It's so a little like Nintendo. If you're counting 16-bit era homework, Nintendo also turned their homework in with the Donkey Kong series. The difference there is those Donkey Kong pre-rendered pieces of business, they were still effectively a 2D platformer. Like, it didn't change the formula. Yeah. Whereas this game, its attempt was, we're going to use, you know, we're still on the old tech here, but we're going to make basically a 3D game. What's the difference?
Yeah.
And they did.
It's 3D rendered, isometric, and a lot of damn fun.
Yeah, I like
must say so.
I like it.
Now, I did not have any problem controlling this game, and it might be because the game was a little bit, wasn't what you usually expect from Sonic. Sonic is a very fast game, and I actually liked some of the slowdown they had. And the reason why it was slow partially is because I read a whole bunch of stuff by the director of the game, John Burton. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he talked about the limitations of the hardware and what they had to do and how frames were drawn.
Right.
And so he explains it quite well on his YouTube channel. I think it's Game Hut. If you're not following what John Burton of Traveler's Tales is doing, you need to follow him. He's got a director's cut of this too, by the way.
Oh, really?
Sonic 3D Blast.
Yeah, really? That sounds neat.
And we'll talk about how to play. I'll tell you all about that when we get to her. Where to play this at.
Because I have a very frustrating relationship with Sonic. The original Sonic games, yeah. 1, 2, and 3, Sonic and Knuckles, all that. I don't think I like. I don't even think at the time I did, other than they were kind of the hot thing. And the reason I don't like it is because it is just a lot of streaking past stuff. And I don't feel like I got any time to see anything. I feel like that's not a real game. I want to be able to sort of take my time. And this 3D Blast game let you do that. You can kind of... I don't know. It's not Zelda-ish, but you know what I mean? Like, you just can go and
absolutely
do your thing and not feel like you're rushed constantly. And there's some moments of real speed, and that's fine. That's great. But the core of the game, you know, you can kind of take it at your own pace.
Yeah. And it's kind of open world. You can kind of go where you want to. You don't have to do anything linear. It's it's isometric, marble madness kind of thing, but you don't have to go. You can backtrack. You can collect coins. You can... What you really collected, though, are, and I learned this past week, too. God, I learned so much this past week, Scott, and I didn't even mean to. But the things that you're doing in this game is you're collecting Flickies. Do you remember Flicky 1984 Sonic arcade game?
No.
Yeah, me either. Yeah. It's a game where you play as a bird, and you're flying around on this screen with platforms, and... You have to avoid a cat while collecting little baby birds. And what you do with the baby birds is you drop them off at the exit door, kind of like what Sonic does here. And that's the reason why they called them Flickies, because you can go and you can drop off the Flickies and keep them safe so that you can progress to the next area.
Yeah, the whole game's a fetch quest, basically. It's kind of how it
really is.
Yeah, which is fine.
The little, But man, I played this game hands down more than any more than Crash Bandicoot, more than Super Mario 64, more than anything this week. I played it because there's so many different versions of this. I played it on the Genesis emulation. I played it on the Saturn, by the way, which is probably my favorite on the Saturn.
Saturn 2D games are the bomb, dude. They're so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I liked it because of the texture mapping, and then the bonus stages were actually in 3D. I got to say that the director's cut, really good. One of the complaints that people have about the this game is the fact that it is kind of slow. It doesn't really seem like Sonic lots of times. Mm. He sped all that up because he can't, because he got the processing power now.
Oh,
and that's available out there. You can get it. I got it on Steam. You can buy the Genesis games. This is one way to do it. You don't have to do it this way. This is the way I did it. I bought the Sonic 3D Blast on the Steam for $5, and then I went to the Steam Workshop, downloaded the mod from the director, and launched it and played it, and it was definitely an improvement.
Interesting.
It's faster. Got a better feel to it.
Well, you definitely have the hardware now, which is makes a big difference. I think part of the reason this game didn't succeed in its initial sales and reception was really a simple reason. Which is, you really changed what Sonic is. So the fans were like, wait, what even is this? It feels like a novelty. It doesn't feel like a proper Sonic game. And that's unfortunate because, Nintendo may have faced that as well with Mario, but they pulled it off so well, nobody questioned it, and it stayed there since.
Right.
It doesn't diminish the quality of those 2D games, but basically they were saying, look, here's, Sonic, but not the way you remember him. He's not running around sideways. I think it really threw people and nobody bought it.
And the chat's kind of making a good point. Yes, it was kind of influenced by Mario RPG.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That isometric look too.
Mm-hmm. I can see they were all pre-rendered sprites as well. That whole thing was the same style.
Yeah. And this, And this is also, there was a Game Gear. We haven't talked about the Game Gear on this show yet. By the way, I bought a Game Gear way back in the day at Kmart. It was like 4 years after, they were pretty much just out the door. I was like at a Kmart and I saw over like $20.
Oh,
I picked it up and a bunch of games for like $2 or $3 a piece. I don't know what I did with the thing, but it totally blew my mind away at the time.
I bought one brand new and spent too much money on it. So that's cool.
Yeah. I didn't spend hardly any money on it. Yeah. So there was one called Sonic Blast that launched the same day and was part of the same marketing thing.
Yeah.
But it was called Sonic Blast. Nothing like this.
No.
It's nothing like this. No. They pretended like it was the same thing. It's like
It was the same. It basically played like the other Sonic games, except slower because the Game Gear was not, as powerful as Genesis was. But
yeah. So it was, the more stuff I was reading about Sega during this time, the time they start to fail, all the miscommunication things that are going on within Sega is just outrageous.
No, here's the deal with Sega. Outrageous. Like I it's easy to say it now, but even at the time I remember thinking, okay, your problem is right now with the Saturn, because the Saturn was designed to say, look, all these other machines we made, they weren't fast enough. Now here's a really fast 2D machine. That's what people care about. Right. And no one's telling them any different. And then that thing launches alongside roughly the PlayStation 1, and they're like, whoa, wait, that thing's all 3D. What are we doing? Oh shit. Yeah. We're going to have to wedge 3D in here somehow, which is what they did. And it was bad.
Sega was trying to run like a million different divisions that weren't discussing with each other. And one division was doing something called Sega Mars, and one was doing Sega Saturn. The Mars was the 32X that we got to see here in the U.S. primarily when it first came out. And so their efforts were split between, doing CD stuff and then trying to plug this thing into the old Genesis and give it new life. Mm-hmm. And so everything got screwed.
Yeah.
And
just effed, man.
Watching it fail is the most spectacular thing I've seen. We talk about the console wars all the time, but we used to talk about the
hot. Hold on, you just went super crunchy. Let me see what's going on.
Oh,
is that you? All right, sorry. Okay. Tech issue, everybody. We're back. So, Brian, you were saying, sorry. Continue on with your.
So what was I saying? I think I was saying that Sonic fell spectacular, and we usually talk about the console wars at the beginning, right? We usually talk about what happened at the beginning. We didn't talk about the victims of this. I would say that the 64, because they were all scrambling and they didn't know exactly what to do.
Yeah.
Right. Because we were in a transition stage with tech and there was so much pressure from the actual, the previous generation that they couldn't fail. Right.
Yeah.
And so as a result, they tried to do all these. Nintendo was outside his comfort zone with the N64.
Oh,
and
big time.
That's some of the things.
Big time. Yeah. I think it affected them. I think in Sony's case, they had an advantage of being kind of the little rock star in the room where they're like, we don't care. Look how jittery our polygons are. Who gives a shit? Like, they're just like, we're making these. And everybody else was like, no way, this isn't like we usually do things. Well, Sony's like, we've never done it before, so let's go. Like,
it doesn't matter. Let's just get in here and do it.
To me, that is one of the most fascinating eras in all game history is that era.
Yeah.
Of that transition really to see who did what, how they did it, how they made it through. I'm looking a little bit at some Saturn gameplay here. You're right. They fully rendered out those tube sequences.
Yeah. And the tube sequences. Yeah. I think Sonic R, which was a fully 3D race game, foot race. They used some of the engine from that. They used some of the character models and assets. So you'll recognize that. It's very rudimentary.
Yeah, it's got some nice color though. Because look at this. Normally this is like super bright orange and white. Yeah. And because you're on a Saturn, you got more capability. And the thing is, they really had something. The 2D engine capabilities of the Saturn were unparalleled. They were so good.
It's good.
And then they were like, "Oh shit, we got to do 3D." And then I feel like that's where it started. That's where the poo started to drip,
Yeah.
I don't even know what that means.
It means exactly what you said. The poo did start to drip. It was like it was a nice solid poo up until then. Yeah. And then it just got bad.
Panicked or poorly managed or I don't know. Yeah. It bums me out because huge Sega fan here. I don't know if I've made that clear on the show, but I loved my Genesis. I love this stuff now. Yeah. I gravitate, even like if I've got a choice between a third-party game on a Genesis or a SNES, I almost always choose Genesis. I like that kind of, again, they were the rock stars back then. They were the ones that were like kicking the machine and going, yeah, Nintendo, you think you can do all this? How about us? And then they just forgot or something.
They imploded because this is some of the stuff I've been learning. Once again, I don't know all this yet, but I do know that there was a lot of Sega of America was made up of a couple of different things. The ones we think about Sega of America really is just artist and marketing.
Yeah.
STI, which was the Sega design team who were doing the programming and stuff. They were different, a smaller team, and they were receiving a lot of pressure from here and overseas, and the developers over in Japan were envious of the Americans, and the Americans felt like they were being dissed, and it was just there was just all of this infighting that was going on, and it was just nobody was at the wheel, man. Nobody was at the Sega wheel, or maybe too many people were at the Sega wheel.
I don't even know how they got to the freaking, you know, ultimate success of having a Dreamcast even come out. Like,
the Dreamcast was a miracle, man.
It is a miracle.
It's a freaking miracle, and it is still one of my favorite consoles.
I freaking loved that thing. Loved it. I think the controllers were weird and all that, but whatever. That was the era of weird things. It was so great. It's the first time I ever played a multiplayer game with a friend over the internet. And it was, on something that wasn't a PC. And I did it on, I think it was, we did NFL 2K. Because that was the game that year. It was an amazing football game. And I played my friend Dave, I guess, like all the time on that thing. And we had to make sure nobody was on the phone because it was all dial-up.
Right.
And I was like, Kim, stay off the phone. I'm going to get a touchdown here. Like that sort of thing. It was great, dude. I freaking loved that thing. It was so much fun. Bums me out.
And it felt like every title was a winner, especially after the Saturn, where every title was like, what is this?
A stinker. A stinker is what they were.
Yeah, because, you know, it was really hard to develop for the Saturn, so all the third-party people are like, nah, we're going to go play with Sony. Mm-hmm. Or Nintendo, because Sony was doing something, which was they did something. They had a Crash Bandicoot, not an official true Sony mascot, other than he kind of represented the company for a while, even though he wasn't, you know, he wasn't actually owned by PlayStation.
He was in their Sony ads. They would run just straight PlayStation ads that weren't even about Crash Bandicoot, and he would still be like the head of the ads.
Right.
And stuff.
He was their spokesperson. How about that? So he was. So he comes on the scene, and I actually like the fact that where Super Mario and Nintendo was trying to redefine everything, and they kind of lost a little bit of the platforming. I think that's what kind of bothered me, because it was supposed to still be a platformer.
Sorry, I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing at these ridiculous, overly gesticulated facial expressions in Crash Bandicoot.
Oh my God. It was so 96 for Sony, and it was so radical. It's insane. Yeah. So, all the voice acting done by the same, except for one character, all done by the same voice actor. I didn't know this until I started researching Crash Bandicoot. But
yeah, back then they had no budget for anything else. It was like, we got one dude. Yeah. Let's do it.
But
I interviewed the creator of this and the co-founder of Naughty Dog not too long ago.
Yeah.
And this thing was a bona fide hit for Sony. It did well, you know?
Yeah.
Especially
and
one.
It was a great series, and Naughty Dog really did some amazing Crash Bandicoot games. Some of my I didn't play much Crash back in the day, but playing it this past week, I'm like, wow, they really kept all the platforming stuff, because you are on rails. They kind of keep you, you know, like in a straight path, even though you're looking at, as they called the game, Sonic's ass game, because that's what you were looking at in Crash Bandicoot. Yeah. You were all looking at Crash butt. You know, that was kind of a new concept to us. It's like, you know, like Lara Croft for the PC. People were like, oh, look, I get to follow Lara Croft everywhere with her butt.
Here's some sound from that game. Check this out. These sounds are so, this is so iconic for that game, because the sound of those crates and then those Udabaga, that guy.
Udabaga.
I love him so much. He's my favorite. He's basically your star from Mario.
He really is.
Yeah, you get unlimited power. You're not going to die or whatever. And the minute he said Udabaga, I got excited. I love him.
You're absolutely playing a platformer here, though. Look at this. I mean, you're just... You know, you're just breaking boxes and jumping over stuff and attacking enemies. I mean, this is just platforming 101, just done in 3D. So they kept it simple, right?
Mm-hmm.
They
took a lot of heat for it, too, though. I remember the critics were like, yeah, you should do more than this. This is just too linear for us or whatever.
Right. Well, I'm going to disagree because after many years of playing it, I'm like, yeah, I enjoy this. I enjoyed it. Going from point A to point B. I thought it was a lot of fun. And my God, did you see that Crash Bandicoot with the weird teeth?
Where he does his weird little paws at the end there. It's super stupid.
Yeah. He's a bandicoot, by the way.
Yeah, he's a bandicoot.
I thought he was a wombat. I, for the longest time, didn't know that. I remember reading that was like one of the possibilities was it was going to be a wombat.
Yeah.
And I was like, I thought a bandicoot was a made-up word, but apparently it's a
it's a real thing, yeah.
Animal.
That's hilarious. No, it sounds like something I would do, so I'm happy someone else did it and figured out what a bandicoot is that way. But yeah, like, you know, who would have thought that this would be the Uncharted / freaking Last of Us devs?
Yeah,
unbelievable company now. Like, things have really changed in their favor. But the guy that co-founded it no longer is there. He works at, he left in 2012, 13, 11.
2012, right.
Can't remember. He's now at Meta, doing Meta stuff.
Right, VR doing the business. Meta stuff, baby. Yeah. Bringing us some more Crash Bandicoot, right?
Yeah, more Bandicoot, just in VR. No. So the new Bandicoot, the 4, I guess it is, I hear that's actually quite good. I want to try that.
I've heard it's good, too. I did play a little bit on Steam. I bought the Bandicoot Insane Trilogy, which includes 1, 2, and 3. And it's, I guess, I don't know who had the license at the time, but they didn't have the original source code. So I'm assuming, I don't know if Naughty Dog was a part of it, or I don't know exactly everything. All I know is I fired it up, and I'm like, oh, is there not a way to play with the original graphics?
Mm.
And it's like, no. It's a complete rewrite of the source code.
Oh, okay. Because 4 is a brand new game. The other ones that are remastered, yes, you can't do reverse graphics, which kind of sucks. It'd be cool if you could. But the new one is way more of like a traditional modern platformer with all the kinds of things you think of. And I hear it's quite good. I should play it. Yeah. I also like Crash Team Racing, if I'm honest.
That's one of everybody's favorite. When you talk about Crash, you can't really talk about the Crash without talking about the Crash.
Yeah, that also had Udabaga in it. I think he ran the race or something. I think
his evil brother, right?
Yeah.
Udabaga's evil brother.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost, I don't know if it's racist or not, but it seems like maybe they were playing in some ethnic trouble there a little bit with the Udabaga, whatever.
They were already playing with being kind of chauvinist because, you know, Crash's original girl who they kidnapped here.
Yeah.
Cortex. They kidnapped his girlfriend and she was all busty, kind of like Roger Rabbit's what's her name? Jessica Rabbit.
Jessica Rabbit.
So she's kind of a Jessica Rabbit kind of thing.
Or you know, more like what's the one where you go Dragon's Lair? The girl in Dragon's Lair is the ultimate of that.
That's
right.
That's right. And so now, but then in part two, they made it. They had a sister come in, so she was a lot more, you know, just sassy than really just being some kind of sex object. So. Crash Bandicoot. I have that on my GameCube. That was like the second or third game I picked up on my GameCube because I was like, I really didn't get into Crash back in the day. I want to see what it was about. And then when I thought about it, I'm like, wait, there's a Crash game on my Nintendo? And I was like, okay, but wasn't that a PlayStation thing? So I've learned a lot about Crash the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, the Crash thing was interesting because now you can buy Crash Bandicoot things on everything, and it was never truly the Sony mascot we all thought it was, but
Sony's mascot from the 3D era was Polygon Man. Is that what I read? I think I read that it was like Polygon Man. He was kind of like in the early stuff, marketing stuff. They had like this big giant polygon head. They could have done a lot worse than Crash Bandicoot.
Here it is. Polygon Man was a former marketing character for Sony's North American offices. He appeared in the console's pre-launch ads, commenting on various launch games, but was dropped before Sony's first console. And replaced by a series of popular game characters such as Sophia from Battle Arena Toshinden, Parappa the Rapper, and Crash Bandicoot is on here as well. Polygon Man was basically like God. He's like a big head, big throbbing head going, oh.
He's a big head.
He basically reminds me of a 3D version of Sinistar to me.
Right.
Rotten.
A lot of people are mentioning the chat room, mentioning Spyro. Spyro was Sony's other temporary mascot. Am I breaking up again?
You did, but now you're back. So I don't know what's going on. That's something weird.
Okay.
I don't know what it is. I can't.
Yeah, I just saw it. It just flipped. I just saw it on my end too. So I don't know. But anyway, as long as am I steady now?
You're good now. Yeah.
All right. Good. But Spyro was a real thing. Sony didn't really pick up a mascot. They've had several along the way, but they didn't. Not like when we think of Sega and Nintendo.
Well,
they
now really, I think now the de facto considered mascot is probably Kratos. It's God of War, I think.
Yeah, that when you see it, you think Kratos. There's actually like a little robot thing or something. I think that also did something. I never played whatever the crap that was, but I've seen it.
Remember that PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale thing that was kind of like Smash Brothers they had on the PlayStation 3?
Yes.
So
yes.
Polygon Man was a character in that. You could choose. And
oh, was
him.
He?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Let's see if I've got video. I do. Chat, look at this. So I never played this game. I remember it came out on PS3. It was a direct competitor to Nintendo's business. Oh, you can even hear him talk. Oh, my gosh. Hold on. Let me turn this guy up.
Fight! See what he says. Is an illusion. Absolute power is a seamless illusion.
Okay, he's not even scary.
Ready?
Screw that guy.
I expect him to be like, I am Giant Manhead.
I am Giant Manhead.
Echoey and reverby.
Yeah, not good. Oh, Sly Cooper over there fighting Kratos.
Yeah, Sly Cooper, also a fun little stealth game. One of the first console stealth games I played, I believe.
One of the first 2D stealth games, or not 2D.
Right.
What am I trying to say? 3D. Third-person stealth games that I ever played.
Yeah, yeah.
If you don't count Sam Fisher.
There was a prototype game of a Sonic stealth game. I think it was for the Mars.
What?
So
really?
Yeah. I was like, wow, that's like opposite world there. I mean,
why is there a Transformer
Sonic is the opposite?
This is confusing me. That game never went anywhere, right? The fighting game, nobody played that. That was a bad failure.
I was aware of it, but I never really played it.
Okay, fair enough.
We didn't talk too much, and we need to have a whole episode on Sonic Extreme, and how it was canceled in 1996.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be the first 3D game, and there was a prototype out there, and I did play it. It was neat.
Was it neat? Because I would be concerned. Well, how did you play it? How was that available? How do you get it?
I forget where I think it's just I found it on the internet. I don't even remember where I downloaded it from. I just looked it up and found it on the internet and downloaded it. And next thing I know, you can use like there's like a fisheye filter on it where Sonic is kind of like in a fisheye looking thing, and you actually can walk the walls and stuff. The whole world rotates around as you like when you walk up walls and stuff. It's pretty neat idea, but they had a long way to go. I mean, it was just a prototype, and it's kind of a shame we didn't get it. We didn't really get a proper Sonic 3D game until Sonic Adventure on the Sega Dreamcast, which I think you said before that you didn't really care for.
Adventure. I hate it.
Yeah. Two. I liked two. I didn't care for the first one either. We were very much heavily at that point into all this. I'm like, I don't need this much story in my Sonic game. I want to run.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to run. You don't want any story. See, that's one of my biggest biggest complaints.
Right. Here's the extreme right now.
Yeah, this is extreme.
It's
pretty weird. But it's that really,
cool, right?
Really ugly Saturn graphics. It's so bad. Like,
it really is.
They did not know. Well, again, the machine was not meant for 3D, and so they had to do as rudimentary as possible, and it just came off like. Ugh.
What was that game that we played that was an indie game that was basically on like a platform like that, and you ran around the platform?
That hit 1.0. It's out of early access. It's called
Bullet something.
Ring.
That's right.
Ring of Bullets. Nope. Bullet Time. Nope. Bullet. B- Bullet Rogue. I don't remember. It's good, though. Bullet,
something like that. But it was kind of like that idea. It's like you're on the outside of these rings, which is kind of cool, right? Sonic on rings on the outside in this open world, real platforming where you got to jump or you can fall to your death, you know, into nothingness.
And he's getting rings on rings. Think of that.
Yeah, he's getting rings on rings.
Yeah, and that's intense.
I think it actually, I would, you know, I wish I could have. I wish it could have made it.
I agree. Let's play a reason why I think Sonic Adventure is bad, though. I have some sound.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Enjoy this right here.
Oh, yeah. This is happening.
Huh? He goes full anime at the end. Giving Sonic now, that voice, biggest effing mistake you people ever made. Ever.
Yeah. And it was...
You make Mario go, woohoo, fine, no problem. I got it. It's good. It's this fun little stereotype of Mario. It works. He doesn't say any more than like five words. And he goes, yeah, and that's it. You give him a full vocabulary going, hey, Tails, let's go get us some hot milkshakes or whatever bullshit. Ugh. Hate it.
It was... Okay, so the music I really liked. It is this... It's just...
Here's
it's
some.
Just, why not just use metal. My plane, the tornado?
So listen to that. It's so metal.
Thanks, but you gotta check out my newest power supply. Ta-da!
Okay, that's...
Whoa! A chaos
okay, so they're like always singing metal. Back there. They're always going, Sonic is doing stuff.
So in Mario, you had to read a bunch of stuff, right? That's one of the things I didn't care for the Super Mario 64. You had to read a whole bunch of instructions and it was all in this weird cursive script. I'm like, what? I can't even read this. Yeah. But then here they tell you everything through this, you know, through these vocals and the voice with acting. And since it's none of it's matched with any mouth movement, we forget that there was a time when characters would just stand there on screen and just bounce, and then you would have like a voiceover, right? Oh, yeah, I mean, and the faces wouldn't move at all.
Well, in Mario's case, there was not even any of that. Like, unless you talk about the spinoffs, like the RPG and things, and in those cases, even then, Mario never said anything. But it was always just so straightforward. And so I think the biggest risk Nintendo took, actually, one of them that worked out really well, was not screwing around too hard with the characterization and just said, what if it's just a little woohoo, yaha, woohoo, and that's it.
Woohoo.
You know what I mean? Like that, I think that was really smart. It was understated, absolutely, but also more than it was, but less than it should be. And then Sonic comes along and goes, hey man, radical. And it's just like, gosh, dang it. That shouldn't be what he sounds like.
Well, you know, especially, okay, so we aren't too far away from the Sonic cartoon. And actually, that was one of what they were looking for to do originally with the first Sonic 3D was to bring the Sonic cartoon to reality, because Sonic was actually doing pretty good on TV with the cartoon stuff. So they wanted to kind of capitalize on that. Mario, you remember the Mario show, right? I mean, we love it for its campiness, but we don't want to ever hear it in a game. I mean,
no, we never, ever. Listen, I want to reiterate what Brian just said. We never, ever want to hear it in a game. I don't want to hear Lou Ferrigno. No, that's his name.
We don't. Yeah, Lou Albano. Albano?
Albano. I don't think it's Albino. Yeah.
Albino. No, somebody else entirely.
Super Mario Super Show. Hold on, I got a clip. Let me play it. It's right here. Oh, wait, is this it? No, that's not it. How's this? No, that's not it. I think that
was the song, though.
Yeah, but it's not him talking.
At the Mario. Do the song with the Mario.
It's so bad. I have that whole thing. Is it this one? Too. Maybe it's this. No, that's the song. No.
I'd call them the Super Mario Brothers.
No. 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 No.
I love when Scott gives us the sound potpourri.
I can't find it.
Flop around like a marionette.
And that's not even it. Oh, it's because it says Mario and marionette. Okay.
But anyway, so we do have a lot of dubbing over, because we didn't have any of our characters move their lips because there would be synchronization problems with, you know, the lip sync and stuff. Because this, I believe the disc they distributed, because the ISO I had all the languages, because we were now getting into a medium that was large enough to contain all the localizations on the same disc, right? Mm. We're not talking about carts anymore and smaller space where we got to, you know, the localization is going to take up a huge chunk. We're actually looking at things like, oh, look at all this extra space we have. And so I'm with you. I'm with you. Sonic Adventure 1, I did not care for. I didn't like it. But 2, I really kind of liked. I like it a pretty good bit.
Yeah. It's, I mean, look, Sonic's fine. All right.
Sonic is fine.
I just think he is a really troubling conversion. And there are some good new Sonic games. Sonic Racing, the second Sonic Racing game, the modern car like the Mario Kart ripoff. Very good. It's very good.
Yeah. We'll have to pursue the console mascots kart race eventually one day.
Yeah.
Who did it best? Because Crash Team Racing is pretty good.
Crash Team Racing is good. Mario Kart 8 is a masterpiece.
It's not old, but there's been so many. There's been a few that we could complain about. Surely not every Mario Kart.
I think you have to look at their first outing. I think you have to look at number one. What do we think now? How's it play now? That sort of thing. Mario Kart still plays really well. That's still a very good game.
Yeah.
You know, looks dated, of course, but it plays well.
Yeah.
Does
it play well?
Oh hell yeah! I played it recently. It's good. Plays great.
I played it last year, I think, and I remember going, "Oh yeah, they've improved upon this ugly."
I mean, it's still got. I like that it still has all the drifty bits. Like the part, my least favorite of all time, despite playing a ton of it, Mario Kart games, is that N64 one. Mario Kart 64 sucks. It's got rubber banding up the wazoo. The sprite characters look wrong. Mixed with 3D just didn't look right. It's just a problem, that game.
The 64 was the most Nintendo was ever ahead of everybody when it comes to actual raw power.
Yeah.
They kind of overshot and said, we want to be, you know, we want to be the biggest and baddest on the street. And they kind of overshot a little bit, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I think they overshot.
I think they lost a little bit of their original vision, which they've returned to many times since, which is make it fun first.
Yeah.
Nothing else matters. It's got to be fun first.
Yeah. Do you want to? I'm going to make a modern recommendation, which is not going to surprise anyone because I'm sure a lot of you've already played it. Game Pass is pretty pervasive now, but the new Psychonauts 2 game.
Yes, that is such a spiritual successor to.
It owes its life to these games, but I am telling you, that game is awesome. It's so well made. Do not sleep on that game. Just because we had a couple of busy years with lots of great games, don't forget about that.
It's really good, and it's part of the Game Pass on Xbox, right?
Yeah, Microsoft owns it, so it'll be there forever.
We're getting to a place where we got to stop saying Microsoft owns it because
it'll be true of everything.
They kind of own everything.
Yeah. It's starting to feel that way. I just realized that we're talking today about all this WoW stuff that came out today. And this will be the expansion they announced today, Dragonflight, will be the last expansion that isn't owned by Microsoft.
Wow.
After this, whatever's after this one will be a Microsoft joint, assuming the deal goes through next year, as it's supposed to.
Right.
We shall see.
Oh, by the way, one more thing about the... the Nintendo 64.
Yeah.
It is one of the few consoles that it seems like I always have problems emulating because it just tears machines up.
Even
beefy machines.
Yeah.
Even though the Sony
can be emulated. Why is the GameCube easier? The GameCube is easier to emulate than the N64. Why?
That's what I'm saying. I guess it's just such a complex structure. I've started watching some videos on YouTube about that very topic of, you know, what was going on. Did you see this? I sent you a link to just a couple of last week. This guy has rewritten all the source code for Super Mario 64 and has made it so that what they wanted originally for the 64 was to have two player action. They wanted you to play as Luigi and Mario, but the limitations were just too great. You couldn't get good frames per second doing both. And he's rewritten the source code so that you can at a decent frame rate. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I agree. You sent that to me and I watched the whole thing. It was fascinating. Yeah. Seek that out, you guys.
I didn't know what half of what he was talking about.
You know what I love about it, though? This is why I love that guy. First of all, he's German as hell, and that's great.
Yeah.
Second of all, he has a great English accent, or German accent in English. What I really loved about it, though, is that he didn't bother. You know, a lot of games, people crack into some code and they will show like frame rate data and where you're at and like lots of little running numbers to kind of give you some data. He decides to tap into the Super Mario 64 font. Everything's presented in that freaking googly font. And it's amazing.
Yeah. It is amazing. His name is Kaze Imanar. I'm not saying that even close, but it's K-A-Z-E. And if you look for his YouTube channel, he does fixing the entire SM64 source code, and it's pretty impressive what he did.
Yeah. No, it's cool. You guys should go check it out, especially if you like a German. I like a German.
Yeah.
All right. There it is. Send us your feedback on this one, guys. We want to hear what you think, what you thought of some of these games we talked about, and also some of the ones we didn't talk about. Maybe some of the more obscure failures in the 3D transition. Yep. That certainly.
And tell me how I'm wrong. Tell me how I'm wrong, or even better,
or
tell me how I'm right.
That you're right.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Destroy it.
Ooh. All right, we're gonna play Guess My Game. This is a little game we play at the end of the show, or in the middle of the show, where we try to guess each other's game that we chose from yesteryear. We do it with sound and a hint of a year, and that's it. So I'm gonna start with mine. Here's your hint. I'll give you an exact date: June 1st, 1994.
Wow.
Okay, chat, play along if you want.
That's like 2 years before what we talked about mostly today.
It's true. 94, big year for games, and this was one of them. Now, I played this then. I will say it's not the most mainstream success, but you should know it, I think. Maybe the music will do it for you, because you're closer to a 90s kid than I was. I was late 80s kid. You were early 90s kid. So we had some crossover there. I'm wondering if you'll recognize this for what it is, because it's very early 90s kid game. So here you go. You ready? Boom.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I've played this so many times.
Have you?
Yeah. Like just recently.
Chat room, not Choplifter. It's probably obvious this is Genesis.
Yeah.
That's the sound a character makes when they get hurt. They go, yeah! Yeah! Any guesses? It's
tricky.
Give
me some more hints, man.
Okay. It's based on a popular movie property, but only popular with kids.
Now we're getting down to the brass tacks.
Yeah. So it's an IP game. And the game, or the movie it's based on, kids really liked. It's aimed at kids.
Right.
You can pick one of three boys that are in this movie. You have a really wise dude you're working for. He's also in the game. They have digital face versions of the actors for when you choose your character. Oh, chat room's got it. Don't look. Let me give you another hint. They're really into a certain sport.
Oh, into a sport.
In fact, I'll just tell you, they're into soccer. It's not a soccer game, but they're really into soccer, these kids.
Really? Huh. So is it the game that's the first in the list of my Sega emulation, and so I always ran it like a million times?
Maybe. You might have heard it 100 times and never played it. Do you give up?
Would it be them Three Ninjas Kickback?
Holy shit, it is Three Ninjas. How did you know?
I told you, man, it's the first. Okay, so out of all my ROMs on my Sega Genesis, I always pulled it up first because it was the first in the list.
And it's got a three.
It's listed as Three Ninjas.
Yeah, it's got a three number.
And so
yeah.
I would let that thing sit there because that's when I was testing with to get my controllers working, to get my video stuff working for the core and everything. I did it when I was playing with Emu VR. Dude, every time I load up any of these things, I always end up loading up Three Ninjas. And it's one of the most infuriating games to play if you don't have the controller right.
No, I 100% agree. I still am not sure. I tried today to play it again, and I can't figure out how to get onto the ropes that swing so I don't die on the spikes.
Yeah, you start out platforming. There is no, let's walk for a second.
Yeah.
There's none of that. It's like immediately – if you don't jump from one stump to the next, you're dead. And so it's infuriating not knowing if controls
are correct. You are 100% correct on this. It's not a great game. It's okay.
Was that in the movie?
They were just, I think so. Weren't the kids? Oh, they went to baseball.
That makes sense.
Maybe I screwed up and told you the wrong sport. That wasn't fair. But
yeah. I knew right away. I was just waiting for you to give me as many clues as you could because I was hoping.
Other than the swinging.
The last couple of weeks has been like, we've been getting them like right off the bat. So I was
grabbing,
like,
other than the grabbing the vine to swing, it's actually okay. Right. It's a fun, okay platformer. It's
okay.
Right.
It's okay.
Speaking of the show, Chad, I played a lot of the show this week. That game's good.
Yeah.
The show, by the way, it's really good. Yeah. Go ahead.
By the way, I picked the game that I did like almost 6 days ago. And I was sweating it because I was pretty sure I wasn't going to remember.
Do you remember it though?
Oh yeah. I remember.
Oh, you do?
I had to look it up.
All right.
I had to look it up and I was flipping through and I'm like, oh yeah, now I remember my angle. I had an angle.
Okay. 87 is the year.
I picked this one.
So I'm going to play this.
Year is 1987.
Yeah, it was a good year. It was the year I graduated. I was supposed to graduate in 88, but I was smart.
Oh, were you though?
Not really. I had street smarts. Let's put it that way. My test score sucked, but I aced everything. Or no, no, I'm sorry. It's the other way around. My homework record sucked because I was not, I hated the man, you know?
Right.
But I had amazing test scores.
I am my age now, and I still think homework is stupid.
It is stupid. But I had amazing test scores. Every test score just destroyed everybody in my wake.
Absolutely.
That's just the way it works.
Absolutely.
All right, here you go.
I tested well.
Here's Brian's. This is awesome. Oh, how do I know this?
Some people are probably going, oh, I know this.
The
year
hit.
Was 1987.
NES?
Yeah, actually NES.
Okay.
Yes, NES. Also was on the Commodore 64.
Popular there on the 64?
I don't know. I played this on the NES. And this is both a throwback and a throw forward to something we may talk about shortly.
Ooh. I don't freaking know. I can't. Oh, I don't
what if
know.
What if I told you it was a LucasArts game?
Oh, Full Throttle.
87. Oh, that's a good guess, but not even.
No? Close. Okay, hold on then. Well, that would have been too early.
But it was one of those pick and choose kind of games like we did with the King's Quest.
Was this a Double Fine joint? Do you know? Or
no.
What's his name?
Lucas.
Oh, hey, my nephew Owen's in the chat. Hi, Owen. It's nice to see you back.
Oh, hi, Owen.
Owen doesn't have a friend. Owen doesn't have a friend. That's from a movie, Owen, just so you know.
Throw Mama from the train. Yes.
Hold on here. I don't know. Oh, wow, not Day of the Tentacle. That's too new. That was 90s.
No. Right. This is Maniac Mansion.
Oh! Frick.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's an old school, that's like very old school PC driven freaking point and clicker deal adventure game.
Yes. I did it on the NES, but it was on the PC. Also, you know, Day of the Tentacle is not far off because it was kind of adjacent to Day of the Tentacle. I think it was actually, wasn't some of the Day of the Tentacle monster, wasn't that in Maniac Mansion?
Was it?
If I remember correctly.
Might have been.
And the reason why I thought about this when I was doing some research for our next topic, which is cheaters always win, where we talk about the game shark, the game genie, and the action replay. You could play as the bad guys in this game. I think if you had the action replay, it might have had the other ones too, where you could cheat your way into playing as the bad guys.
Oh, I see. Well, now that you say that, I'm trying to think.
Maniac Mansion.
Maniac Mansion is a game I never played fully, but I have an appreciation for it.
Right.
But I feel like an idiot for not getting it today. So good job.
I would have thought the chat room. I was expecting the chat room to get it. Because that first little bit of music is very iconic.
They're too busy yelling choplifter.
Choplifter.
Because, you know. That's what they
do. We're going to need you to pick up your game, people.
All right. Well done. That's fun. It's always fun doing that. It's now time for this.
Welcome to the treasure room.
Booty. We're going to do emails, everybody. Yeah, that's right. Sit down and listen to this email sent to playretroshow@gmail.com. This one from Kevin, who says, "Hey, guys, I'm a big fan of the new show. I listen to every episode as soon as I'm able, and it has reminded me about the Mini Bosses, a metal covers band of heavy metal covers of classic video game soundtracks. If you aren't familiar, you should definitely familiarize yourselves. There have been other bands that do the same thing or something similar, but these guys were the first ones I was exposed to at age 17 or so. I'm sorry, 16 or 17 years ago. Mega Man 2 was their fan favorite. Their Bandcamp link is in here. Mini Bosses.
This is awesome. No one can, and there's the reason why there's, the only ones you're probably going to remember is Mini Bosses. That is a great band name.
No, it's amazing name.
Progressive rock.
Yeah. Let's see. I'll get a little sample of something here. We got something called Brass Mouth or Brass 2 Mouth. Here's a song, Kid Icarus. You remember Kid Icarus?
Yeah, I do. That was the other,
Oh, you know what? Let's do Super Mario Brothers 3. That's better. That's got music we recognize. Hang on. Here we go. Oh, whoops. Oh, yeah, they're going way metal on this. Let's go ahead. It's good. It's really good.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah. This is thank you for that, Kevin.
These guys are hardcore.
Because now I have something new to listen to. I'm going to add that to my my playlist.
I love their artwork too. Their artwork is
so cool. Mega Man 2 is their fan favorite. Yeah.
It's funny though, their album cover is full of Metroid imagery, but there's no Metroid songs on here.
I did see one Metroid song in the list.
Not on this album. Not with this cover. Mm-hmm. At least I can't see it. Right. There's another one. Part 1, maybe it's on Part 1. Let's see. Give these guys a nice pimp here. Oh yeah, Metroid's on Part 1. It's 10th song on the Part 1 of these two albums. So there you go.
Nice.
Anyway, great recommendation. Thank you for that, Kevin. One more email from, his name isn't later, Chuck Byers.
His name is later. You read the name.
I read the later.
You read his sign off.
Yep. I read it
later. Later says.
Yeah. Goodbye also says. good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm a fan of the old arcade game Discs of Tron. Hey, so
Ooh,
are
God,
we.
I love that so
much. Yeah, we're going to have to do a whole thing on that. I have it bookmarked on archive.org. I play it from time to time. Yesterday, I was searching for a little deeper information there, and I found a PDF of the manual for its arcade machine. And he attached it. I didn't put it here, but you can easily find it. I grew up in Pittsburgh, and there were a lot of arcades to go to. But the only Discs of Tron was at a mall about 30 minutes from my house. We would make a special trip just to play that game.
Dang, Skippy.
I wanted to know, Scott, did your dad have an arcade one? I don't think there was any other stand-up arcade machines like it. You stood up, but had a little seat behind you to lean against. Also, it was kind of like a phone booth that you got into. So instead of just standing in front of it, so that was cool and unique. The manual is a good picture of it. The gameplay is still fun to play. At the time, I was into playing Ultimate Frisbee and Racquetball, and DOT combined elements of both. Discotron is DOT. You had to fight the AI and the other platform with the disc. You could throw three at a time, and they all had to come back to you before you could throw another one. The object, of course, is knock the other guy off the thing or get knocked off yourself. Mm-hmm. When I got demoed, when the meta people had me in their virtual world and they were demoing player-created stuff, one of the things they demoed was me. I poured it into a big Discotron recreation. It was it was actually freaking rad is what it was. Anyway, he says, looking at the manual, I saw and it helped me recall that it had a flight stick that had a trigger on it. I remember that. It was like a full-on.
It was a really cool, like almost like translucent or something, wasn't it?
It was awesome.
Yeah.
It says you could fire discs and move your guy around, but there was also a Tempest-like wheel that was used to move the aiming reticle around the wall.
That's right.
Yeah. That's a cool machine. That Discotron machine, badass.
That was a wicked cool machine. Now, I just looked up because he was describing one like in a phone booth and stuff. I'm like, I don't remember that. Mine was just you just walked up to it and it was just like a regular arcade machine, but it was, it had the cool stick and the wheel and everything. Yeah. And I pumped a lot of quarters in this thing. It was a pretty good value because you could play for a pretty good while on a quarter. I didn't feel cheated
No,
and
no
I rubber like banding. I had a chance to improve. Yeah. So it was a good game.
It was hard, but it was fair.
Arcade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
It was hard, but fair. Just like Tron.
Yeah. Like Tron himself. Maybe not Tron. Who is the bad guy played by David Warner? What was his name?
I just call him David Warner. It just isn't even.
I love that.
They
guy.
Gave him a name, but I'm like, whatever.
He's
David Warner.
He's a Klingon in the sixth Star Trek movie. Anyway. Hey, guys.
Flynn,
guess what?
Flynn is the real bad guy. Go ahead.
Yeah, Flynn was always the truest evil man is right. Flynn. Hey, yeah. Good news, by the way. This is exciting stuff. We're going to do, Brian already mentioned it, but we're doing Cheaters Always Win next week. Game Genie, Game Shark, Pro Action Replay, all that stuff you remember? We're going to dissect what the hell that was about. It was a weird
was it fun?
Time.
Did you enjoy it?
I mean, maybe, but here's the thing. This would be horribly frowned on today. Now, people like to hack things and do things and whatever, but if you're caught cheating in a game, people are pissed, especially multiplayer.
Right, well, see, yeah, but you wouldn't use that stuff with, like, multiplayer games unless you were couch co-op, and then they would know you're cheating. So, I mean, it was just a way. So it extended the life of the video game. I rarely cheated when I first got a game, but I did eventually cheat a good bit because, you know, there's a certain point that some of the cheats let you do, like get to, you could automatically go to a particular level. Mm-hmm. You could jump straight to it. So if you couldn't have a game save or something, or if you lost your passwords, then you could just jump straight to it. So it's kind of like filled that gap of BS sometimes that it allowed you to adjust the difficulty of the game by keying in crazy amounts of codes. Yeah. Long codes. You had to look up in books and stuff.
Oh, yeah. I remember books. Remember books? Books, man.
Books. Books. Yeah, remember books?
Nobody likes books. But anyway, that'll be next week. Very excited about this one. It's going to be a fun dig. So come join us next week. Oh, no. We won't be here next week. We're trying to figure out what next week is. I'm not saying there won't be a show because I just don't know yet. We're going to Las Vegas for the morning stream, and it's like that whole week except for the weekend. There may be a way for me and Brian to hook up at the tail end of the week or something to do something. I may record something there. We're working all this out. Okay.
Yeah. The next show proper would be what we just said. But yeah, there may be a show in between that is something different.
Yeah, we're going to try real hard to get something out there. So some of you I know are coming to Vegas, and I look forward to seeing you all then. In the meantime, send us those emails. As I told you earlier, it's playretroshow@gmail.com. And if you don't be doing that, what you be doing, you know, be sending us those. Mm-hmm. playretroshow@gmail.com. patreon.com/playretro is how you can support this show. If you like what Brian and I do and you want to throw us a little cash, it's not much. So head on over there and say, I don't know, a buck. How about a commercial free experience every time for a dollar? Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
How cheap is that? That's insane. patreon.com/playretro. And I know you're sitting on your thumbs over there going, oh, I really should, but I'm too tired. No. Now's the time. Click, bam, boom, you're in. Okay?
That's only four rounds of Discotron.
Yeah, Discotron, four rounds, one quarter, go. Or no, wait, I'm sorry, that's a dollar. Anyway, Play Retro Show on Twitter. You can find us on frogpants.com/playretro as part of the larger Frog Pants Network. That is it for us. Brian, any final words before we go?
Yeah, Discotron rocks.
Yeah, it does.
Let me go get my Tron suit on.
I want to go do all things Tron now. Tron's great. Yes. I love Tron.
Tron.
Turn on your Trinitron TV, and we'll see you next time, everybody.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
Hey, I'll play with you some other time.
Okay, Sonic. Freaking...
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.